Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Horse Geeks podcast, where we look at horses and riding from the inside out. I'm Kirsten Nelson, professional horse trainer. With me today is Deb Romero, certified Alexander Technique instructor. And today's topic is about natural horsemanship, or keeping horsemanship natural, or that whole buzzword of natural. Right. So would you like to kick it off today, Miss Deb, with what does it mean to you? Either, how do I want to say, keeping it natural, or let's just start with the term natural horsemanship, because it's kind of become an entity, or it's become a vein of training. Natural horsemanship. It is its own thing.
Okay, that's a good way to put it.
Or line of training. So let's start with that. Let's sort of talk about what is natural horsemanship according to today's terminology.
Wow, that's difficult because I really have a hard time with that word natural. Even in everyday, what is natural? Is that nature? Is nature intended it to be? Do they, you know, what's the hype word natural mean in the, with the word horsemanship?
So what does natural mean to you? If you just took that term natural?
The way, you know, kind of like, the earth expected it to be, how say the animal would be in their own environment. And none of what we do with horses, I don't think has to do with anything from where they came from.
I agree 100%.
So I'm having a hard time with those two words being together.
Well, and I think if we go back to sort of the evolution of what we call natural horsemanship training, at the time, when I started learning natural horsemanship, there wasn't a name for it. That was sort of coined later. It was just vaquero style training. And what it was working with the nature of the horse. And I think that's why it got the term natural horsemanship.
Oh, that makes more sense than natural horsemanship.
Right. Right. So it was really a way of working with the horses, understanding their psychology, their innate needs in the domestic environment, trying to work with the nature of the horse psychologically. And that part I still agree with 100%.
Yes, I do. You know?
And, you know, and then one of my mentors, Gavin, would often say, you know, nature is not separate from human beings. We are a part of nature. And oftentimes we talk about it as two separate things. There's nature and then there's people. And it's like, no, we are a part of nature. Right. It's not separate from us.
Right.
Right. But I think what natural horsemanship has become, the term natural really means without influence other than Mother Nature. Right. So if we really said natural, we would still live in caves. You know, we wouldn't have grocery stores. If we were really still a part of nature, we evolved through that. And we have domestic amenities now that make us more comfortable. And so even with your work, like to leave a body in a natural state, what does that mean to you as a body worker?
It kind of goes back to what you use, the learning frame of mind. It's a psychophysical thing. It's not one or the other. It's the combination of and the being in the parasympathetic, having some sort of internal and external balance.
Or would you say every human being just knows how to move perfectly given a perfect body without a lot of genetic anomalies or illness or anything like that?
Wow, that's a tough one.
Do people move naturally without external influences? Would you say the majority of people do that?
No.
No, neither do horses.
No, because there's too much external expression coming at you these days.
Well, I think always.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like if we didn't have homes and jobs, it's like we have the external influences of just trying to survive and yes. find food. So it's like there's always external influences, but people don't move in their most optimal, even though the inherent design of our bodies has a naturally, you could say, optimal function, because form follows function, or in anatomy, function is dictated by the form. So every part of our body has a specific form that shows us its natural ability to manage stresses, external or internal, without in the most efficient way possible and doing the least damage. But yes. we're not born knowing that.
No.
So to
especially leave humans, I mean, I'm sure animals, you know, like horses in the wild, they've got to be up within an hour or there's somebody's lunch.
Well, that still happens. Even in a domestic mm-hmm. environment, that instinct of a baby horse to get up and get moving, you can't take that away. That's yeah. still there, which helped them survive in the wild for sure. But that's what refines or develops our instincts through evolution. But a horse, it's like if we were really going to work with natural horses, we wouldn't geld them. And we
wouldn't going to start there, huh?
And we wouldn't keep them, you know. So what is like natural that? About having a domestic horse in the first place? Because if you right. go out to the BLM land, catching a wild horse is no small deal.
Nope.
Right? You can't just walk up with a halter and a bucket of food and think you're going to catch them.
Yeah.
So that is really the nature of the horse, is a prey animal, not to interact with predators.
Exactly.
So if we look at just nature on that level, or what is natural, it's not natural at all to have horses as pets or companions or working partners.
Right. It's
like that already goes beyond what nature intended for the prey animal species and the predator species, but it happens all the time.
Yes.
Right. So I like the term natural in working with the inherent nature, the instincts or the inherent anatomy of the species, whether it's horse or human. I like that part of natural.
Yes.
But I think it gets carried a bit far when we go natural horsemanship means you have to have a rope halter, or natural horsemanship means you do these kind of exercises, or these, you know, you do these various maneuvers, and that's what distinguishes you as a natural horsemanship person from something else.
Wow. Yeah. That brings up a lot of stuff.
What does it bring up?
Because to me, that's, it's kind of like in the Alexander world, between the difference between doing and being. When we start talking about material things, I think the human goes to the doing thought process, but truly the horses just want us to be.
Yes.
And notice what their needs are, their emotional, psychological, and physical needs are, not what halter we're using and things like that. So I think it's hard for the human because we really like to be doers and controllers, especially of a large four-legged creature.
Right.
So, I mean, there are safety issues. And like you said, the learning frame of mind to me is the bottom line. You know, if you don't have that, safety's out the window.
Well, and even the concept of the learning frame of mind was a little bit based on what I learned in natural horsemanship, or whatever you call it, working right. with cowboys, was the whole horse whispering idea mm-hmm. was working with the horse's nature, not yes. subjugating the horse
exactly.
to our will. And that could create a relationship and a bond that moves us and the horses beyond our prey predator instincts.
Yes.
So to work with a horse first meant psychologically understanding the horse and yes. reading the body language is really what it comes down to, was the energy and the body language, not whether you do this technique or that technique or this technique. Mm-hmm. It was much more between a horse and human. And I think the reason that natural horsemanship became such a huge part of the horse industry is because at the time that it was just sort of working its way out there with different clinicians, the whole horse industry was sort of geared towards what do you ride? Where do you compete? How do you perform? Or what work do you do? So the mentality of riding at the time was less about the relationship and more about what does the horse do for you?
Mm-hmm, the duties.
And I really think it was an evolution in with horse owners going, maybe I don't care about that. Maybe yeah. I just want to learn about my horse. And I think that's why the whole genre of natural horsemanship really caught on and became a huge force in the horse industry, because it met a deeper need between a horse owner and the horse.
Yes, it wasn't, at the beginning, I agree.
Yeah, and it wasn't being addressed in any other type of training.
Right. Because most of the training, and correct me if I'm wrong, came from military background.
Yes.
Way back when.
Or the Baroque era of sort of the higher level of training during the Baroque era. That's when most of training was developed, was either for war, work, or art. That was pretty much it. And I think natural horsemanship gained a lot of popularity because people wanted to start understanding their horses, mm-hmm. having a relationship with their horses. And I think that that's still true today. I don't dismiss that part of it at all. But where I saw, as humans do, sort of really swing the pendulum too far that direction was
if
it
this
like
works take more
right or like you said I think a lot of people missed the point or lost sight of the mm-hmm. original intention, and it became what equipment do you use, what yes. exercises are you doing, what, you know, how many of these things do you have under your belt, what magical looking things can you do with your horse, riding bridleless or, you know, doing tricks at Liberty or things like that. It just became what I can do with my horse.
Exactly.
And I ended up leaving the world of natural horsemanship because I started to see a lot of people were missing the point. Mm-hmm. There were some sour, unhappy horses, anxious horses that were never improving, and horses that were having severe physical issues, lameness, mm-hmm. weakness, deterioration of the body, because that wasn't specifically addressed in natural horsemanship. It's more of a psychological perspective.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And that's when I found you, because I was going through that same process of 2-3 separate horses that I had were coming up lame. And I was like, okay, it's got to be something I'm doing. Not the horse. If I've got 3 horses with the same problem, it's something I'm doing.
Absolutely.
So absolutely. I figured I've got to find something else.
And
AKA Kirsten Nelson.
And it's just like what you find in your work. The whole premise of the Alexander technique is that we're not born knowing how to best utilize our anatomical form. Right. And that's a learned skill.
It's a learned skill. And we're missing, there's something called the DART procedures where he found there's missing loops in, say my son never crawled. So that's a missing link in his growing up. He went from the marine crawl to walking. So there's a neurological loop that was missed.
Interesting.
Growing up. So how that works for him now, I haven't talked to him about it, but there's evidence based on that. that when we're exploring as infants, all of those stages are critical. And we have an innate pattern that we use to say, roll over and get up. So it's all, we ingrain it very early.
Right. No, and horses do as well. It's like the first time a young horse has a live rider on their back, if the focus is be obedient, have steering, have woe, have go, walk, trot, canter, and don't try to get me off your back. If that's the primary focus, then the horse figures out how to do that, hopefully without falling over. And we call that training. But it's like that imprinted neurological function of how they do it can just remain until they either go lame or they can't take it anymore and become behavioral issues. Because horses, just like people, aren't going to figure out the best way to use their bodies or optimize their minds. So that's what training is, whether it's for the horse or the human, is getting outside guidance, outside influence. Mm-hmm. And what natural horsemanship brought up that I think was really not addressed before that era was, what is my horse feeling and thinking? What is, mm-hmm. you know, how is the mind of my horse working? What's the psychology? And understanding instincts, understanding horse psychology or prey animal psychology, I think all of that shifted the whole horse industry quite a bit. And that part I still agree with. But humans being humans, I also saw psychology used to subjugate horses, using psychological tools to gain obedience or submission, become dominant and ask for submission, or to get the horse to do what we wanted psychologically with pressure and release and with positive, negative reinforcement without ever considering what the horse is thinking or feeling along the way. Just sort of the doingness of getting these tasks performed. And to me, the psychological tools became more dangerous than using a big leverage bit or different training devices. It was like, because I think it really impacted the spirit of the horse.
Yeah.
And I started to see, instead of bringing out and enhancing the spirit of the horse by understanding the nature or the psychology and guiding it into better use in the domestic environment for the horse, these psychological weapons were sort of used against the horse and can break the spirit of the horse as much as breaking a horse to saddle using leverage or physical manipulation.
Right.
So I go, one was not any better than the other, because if it's used to that end, we still don't get it. We're not going to enhance the relationship. You know, we're not even working to understand horses. We're just still self-centered, trying to get the horse to do what we want, so we look so cool with our horses. And we can do these amazing things that we can put on TikTok. And it's like, no. We missed the point.
I remember I had an Alexander teacher come out that was a horse person and just wanted to pop on one of my horses, and it was bareback, and she went into that mode of kick to go and pull to stop, and she kicked my horse to go forward, and my horse turned around and bit her. She said, we don't do it like that at the
barn. We don't do it like that around here. Yeah.
She went, oh. I went, not a good idea.
No, and once you introduce to a horse the idea that they can have an opinion, that they can make choices, that they can that they are encouraged to think for themselves, which is really the only way to develop authentically mechanically correct coordination. There's no way.
The self-carriage we were talking about.
Exactly. Yeah. Like last time
totally
with self-carriage.
Agree.
And sometimes when you start to show, when you quit punishing a horse for having an opinion or voicing their thoughts, so to speak, through actions, they really like that.
Yes.
And if somebody comes along who's still in the frame of mind of dominance and submission and obedience, it's like they flip him the bird. I've had horses, buck in place or go backwards or turn around and bite, or, and these are normally very cooperative, kind horses, but.
Yeah. And I begin the questioning, if my horse won't stand at the mounting block, then that's something, you know,
it's,
I'm getting a clue there. I'm getting a clue there that, hey, I'm not ready. Something's not right. And I need to backtrack and say, okay, let's figure this out. What's going on? I don't want to get on that horse that's not going to stand at the mounting block.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think to kind of shift topics a little bit, I think one of the things that kind of irritates me now about this whole natural horsemanship sort of idea is when people carry it into horse care, feeding or hoof care or shelter, things like that. That's where it starts to really, I get really irritated because I find some people use the excuse of, this is how a horse lives in nature, so it's okay for my horse in the domestic environment.
I never thought of that.
And my farrier can go on and on for about an hour about it, because, you know, horses, if in the environment in which they best survived was high desert, dry climates, that's the environment where they best survive. I live in Florida. I go, it's, you know, reptiles survive. Birds do very well here.
Yep.
Horses, mammals, different struggles. And I have never had to be so meticulous about grooming a horse as since I lived in Florida.
Yeah.
When I lived in California and Colorado, the environment itself was more conducive to healthy, rock hard feet where my horses maybe could go barefoot, maybe needed shoes, you know, healthier for their skin, their coat.
Yes.
There just weren't so many bugs. It was a totally different environment.
Yeah, management when I lived in New Mexico was completely different than the management here in Virginia.
Yeah. And so to keep a horse healthy and work with the nature of the body, work with the nature of what a horse is, every time we put a horse in an environment that's not indigenous, we have to change our horse care. We have to change our feed, our supplements, our vet care, our farrier care. All of that has to change because we made the choice to put them in a different environment that's not easy or natural to the horse.
And they're so much more adaptable than we are.
Yeah, we take it for granted.
Yeah, we do. We do. We expect it. We expect the horse to load in this tiny little box with no windows.
Right.
You don't want to get in there.
Right.
That's not a natural thing for a horse to do, go into something that they can't see all the way around.
Right. But working with their nature, horses are also highly adaptable. And if they're not afraid, like once they investigate something new, they're very quick to ascertain whether it is potentially dangerous or okay to do. And that's how horses survive in the domestic environment, is that high level of adaptability and being able to sort out what is dangerous from what is safe. And so if we take time with the horses to develop authentic acceptance, they can get in a trailer. Right. If we stuff the horse into a trailer using a lot of leverage or fear tactics or even bribes, then we usually have an accident while we're driving the trailer, or it gets harder and harder to trailer load the horse because
that's what I see. Or they got on, but they won't get back on after I've been to the show. You know what I mean? It just multiplies and gets bigger.
Right. Because, yeah. And this kind of goes back to the Learning Frame of Mind podcast, where basically, if they're not in the parasympathetic nervous system, where they're calm and they're accessing the higher functions of their brain, then they're acting instinctually. They're sort of reacting to either pain or pressure or psychological tools just to avoid what they don't want.
I think people do the same thing.
How so? That's really interesting. Give me an example.
A child being pushed in a certain area of education that they're not comfortable with, they're not ready for. They can end up in, you hear things like, oh, my tummy hurts, I don't want to go to school today. You know, those are real simple things that there's pressure that the child or the human, it can be an adult, that they're not ready for.
That individual needs either different guidance or something different to get to the same place.
And do we pause and interrupt our thought of control and step back and say, wow, okay, maybe I need to go a different way. Maybe this person's not ready for that. Move on to something else.
Right. Right. Or even like there's quite a bit that goes with the natural horsemanship idea is keeping horses outside 24/7 and leaving them barefoot. I go, those are horse management issues that are so dependent on the actual environment in which the horse lives, that are the environment's not in our control. And in South Florida where I lived, the conditions were so wet, even during the dry season, it was high moisture, that taking care of the horse's skin and feet was a huge management issue because the hooves are like sponges. And so they just absorb water, causing them to spread out, deteriorate, fall apart, which can be a life-threatening issue to a horse.
Yes.
And so I think almost every horse I had in South Florida at some point had to have shoes on just to keep the integrity of the foot intact. And people who get on a bandwagon about never, ever, ever will I put shoes on my horse, I go, it depends.
Good point.
It depends. The barefoot management with all the different strategies I could use, and even using boots instead of shoes, was going to trap more moisture in the foot and make it worse. And so it's like, nope, this avenue of putting shoes on a horse developed for a reason, to help the horse stay sound in conditions that were very wet or very challenging for the horse. And the same thing with the skin. I go, the high level of moisture we have here, I've become a skincare wound care expert in Florida, because if you're not right on top of it, knowing which kind of treatment to use, those wounds can become life-threatening very fast because of the humid conditions.
Yeah. So I think it's what I'm hearing is for the good of the horse. We have all these avenues we can use, and not getting stuck in one methodology.
Exactly. So to say,
care, always be open to, okay, maybe I don't know what I don't know.
Right. Or to say a steel shoe is a foreign object on a horse, so I'll never put shoes on. I go, well, then why would you ever use a bit or a bitless bridle? Why would you ever put a halter on your horse? That's unnatural. Why would you ever put a saddle on your horse? That's unnatural. Why would you ever put a horse in a trailer? That's unnatural.
Right.
All of those things, including shoes. Yes, it's unnatural. It's part of working with the mind and body of a horse to have a partnership. So yes, we use unnatural things all the time. Right. We even provide food and water. So when we provide, even if they're turned loose 24/7 in the perfect high desert environment on 3,000 acres. It's like, if we're providing food and water,
right,
then we've already taken away or provided for the natural needs of the horse and taken away the feralness or right. wildness of the horse, right? And so as soon as we provide food and water, it's a domestic horse.
Good point.
Right. So then why not? It's like in Florida, when people say my horse stays out 24/7, it's like, I just.
You cringe.
I cringe because I go, you try living in Florida without air conditioning or a fan. It's like, that's so uncomfortable for our bodies. Why would we think a horse can just naturally cope with it better because they're an animal? So to not provide shade or a fan in the heat of a Florida summer, it's like, just because it's not natural to the horse doesn't mean it's not useful to the horse.
Good point.
And helping the horse stay healthy, helping the horse have a better life because they're in a domestic environment.
Exactly.
So that's where I thought natural went too far. It's like nothing we really do with a horse is entirely natural.
True.
Nothing at all. So if we turn the term natural into more or less horsemanship, working with the nature of the mind and body, I go, then I think we make better choices. Instead of thinking of the horse as a piece of farm equipment or sporting equipment that's here for our pleasure,
yes,
I think that's where natural, you know, or working with the nature of horse does become important. Because they're not just here for our pleasure. You know, they do have thoughts. They do have feelings. They definitely have opinions.
Definitely. Yes. Yeah, I think my experience with my horses, because I've had these horses for 20 some years now, I'm at a totally different place than I was 20 years ago. Because I was deep into the natural horsemanship at that point. And I truly feel, you know, my horses actually have a say in our relationship.
And even if I'm working with a horse, because some behavioral issues are directly related to the physical stability or functional use of the body. Some right. horses don't feel safe in their own skin doing
totally
the job
agree.
Of being ridden or being driven. And coming in through the physical door of working with the inherent nature of the body. It's like the better we understand how the body should function, what the forces of motion should feel like, that also improves what we call behavior.
Yes.
And I find there's nothing more interesting to a horse than how they physically feel internally.
Yes.
It is, they have deep concentration when you're working on altering physical habits or improving movement or physical use of the body. And so you can't address everything psychologically.
Right.
And I would say at least 50% of what we call bad behavior or bad personality traits is really has a physical root cause that the mm-hmm. horse, the human isn't understanding, like you discovered in natural horsemanship, all three horses were going lame. What, you know, that has something to do with the work or the tasks that I'm doing.
With the same problem. It was all the same problem too.
Yeah.
And so the same lameness on three horses. And I went, then some, it's me. I'm doing something I shouldn't be doing.
Right. And whether that's your body use or the training exercises you're using or the methodology that you're following, you know something's wrong.
Yes.
Because now there's a pattern. Yes.
Yes.
And that over time, dysfunctional use of the body that's creating extra stresses and strains through parts of the body that were not intended to have it will lead to either behavioral issues or lameness.
Yes.
So when we use psychological tools to gain obedience and submission, if we're not addressing physical issues, then that horse gets stuck perpetually and gets labeled as a difficult horse, which even happened when I was in the world of natural horsemanship. There were certain horses that would not make improvements no matter what kind of psychological tools were used. And they were the first horses that opened my eyes to, this horse has real physical challenges. You can't address this with behavior. You can't address this psychologically. You have to address either the physical problem, which on some of the horses I worked with, they had already been through a whole gamut of veterinarians and body workers and farriers. So all the normal stuff didn't apply. Well, it applied, but horses that were getting labeled as difficult in the natural horsemanship world either had deep functional issues, which meant how they were worked or how they were ridden had to change, or they had issues that were so difficult to figure out. It took a lot of diagnostic work to figure out there was a problem with the endocrine system, or, you know, something in the back, or a muscle problem, or something that was hard to diagnose. And what was fascinating is those horses, even in the natural horsemanship world, got labeled as, in a sense, unchangeable.
Wow.
And that was where my taste for natural horsemanship as a training genre completely soured. Because to me, the whole premise was, there are no bad horses. If we learn to work with the individual, every horse can improve.
I feel that way about people.
And I still feel that way about horses. So when horses start getting labeled, you know, when people want to sell horses, get rid of horses, okay, that's, you know, depends on maybe your personal safety. Nothing wrong with that. But for a horse to get labeled as unfixable, I go, that's the human running out of creativity or knowledge or skills or all of the above.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Goes back to what we don't know, we don't know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But if we do believe there is a way, if we look at instincts and we look at anatomy, those are unchangeable realities.
Right.
Of the horse's body and mind. And then we have gravity and the forces of motion, which we've also already talked about.
Right. The physics of it all.
The physics. I go, there's no getting around that.
No, that's the truth. That's like, that's my go-to place.
Me too, because it's not a belief anymore.
Right. It's
just
truth.
A hardcore reality.
Yeah. And the same with people and physics. That's the truth. That's the knowledge base that doesn't change.
Well, and it kind of made me think, our conversation today kind of made me think about the woman you worked with who thought she had one shorter leg for 20 years.
Yeah.
And do you still work with her?
Yeah.
And so how has her mentality changed? How has her psychology changed? Or what is she?
It's really interesting to me. And I'm wondering if horses do this too. I mean, we believe the new reality, but we also still haven't gotten rid of the old habits and thoughts of the past.
And so how does that play out? What do you mean?
I think when you give a person a different way of being, you need to give that constant support, or the old habit dies hard, as they say, can have a tendency, even psychologically in your thought process, move back in.
Oh, absolutely. I would call it habits, functional habits. So a function is just our predominant thoughts are a function of the mind, right? Our predominant emotions are a function of biochemistry. Our way of moving or how we do anything is a physical functional habit. Yes. And all of those are developed through the nervous system as strong neural pathways, right? So in order to have a habit, a functional habit, just saying it's a habit means there's a strong neural pathway. Mm-hmm. And so just like a computer, it's a default setting.
Right, exactly.
It's a default setting. And until you really upgrade or optimize or install new software and repeat the new software, it's like that default setting is there.
Yes.
And to turn a functional habit around is a big deal.
It's a big deal. It's a struggle. I have a new client. Well, I've been working with him since March, and he's fine. And we work every week. He's finally to the place that he's bumping into his habit. He's always been bumping into his habit, but he acknowledges it now. And he's becoming very frustrated at how often that happens.
Yeah.
He says, it's everywhere. And I said, yeah, I know.
Yeah. Default is default.
Default.
Yeah. So. And when it comes to internal functions, whether it's inside our body or inside the horse's body, it has to change from the self.
I totally agree. We cannot manipulate or control that.
No, we just have to interrupt it when it comes up and make a new choice.
Yeah.
And so with our horses, what we do is we guide. It's like, okay, if their habit was high flight, running away, not wanting to be caught, it's going to take some time to break that pattern because that's the default setting of how the horse has been responding to humans for some time. So even after we make our initial breakthrough, taking time and working with the nature of that horse, we still have to repeat it a lot. And at the first sign of something going sideways, that horse goes right back to default.
Yes. That's survival. It's just pure survival.
And the internal feeling, our brains want the habit because it makes, it takes less energy in our body
to
operate on a habit than it does to change a habit. That takes a lot of energy, whether it's mental, emotional, or physical. It takes a lot of awareness, which takes a lot of energy to even notice that we're in a habit.
Yes.
And then redirect that energy. So it's exhausting.
It is exhausting. I completely agree.
Yes. And like you went through huge functional changes when you went through the Alexander School. In the 3 years I watched you go through school, it's like your whole body shape and how you moved transformed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think you said the first year after an hour or two of school, you just had to like take a nap.
I'd go in the corner with my blankie and suck my thumb. I was like, I'm done.
Nervous system overload.
I can't do it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And they accept that. And that's the cool thing. You know, you can't go up to a horse and say, we're still going to beat this dead thing to death. And we're going to come out on the other side. It doesn't work that way with people either.
Well, and coming full circle, back to the topic of natural horsemanship, it's like what you're describing is the Alexander School knew the nature of a person making changes of habit in the nervous system, making functional changes of the body was going to be exhausting. So they made space for that.
Yes.
And that's really, to me, the original intention or the essence of good natural horsemanship.
Yes.
Is working with the nature of the mind and the body. Like you can't just have one or the other.
No.
That's a disaster. A lot of competitive riding is manipulating or working with the body, no matter how the horse feels or what the horse thinks about it. And so natural horsemanship was sort of a pendulum swing the other direction. But I go, there's a place in the middle where we can work with the nature of the mind and the nature of the body in order to go beyond instinct and really develop potential or develop talent.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. So anything you want
to
wrap up?
Sounds
talking
good
about
me.
Natural or natural horsemanship. I feel better about the term natural horsemanship.
I feel better now.
But natural horsemanship is not specific equipment. Natural horsemanship is not specific exercises and techniques and levels of progression or tasks to be performed. I think when we take that approach, we may as well still be using leverage devices or manipulation. It's a manipulation tactic.
It's a doing. It's a do. It's a do to control.
Right.
Typical human predator thing.
And I think you nailed it. I think that's what I'd like to kind of wrap up with. That whether we call it natural horsemanship or competitive riding or whatever venue of training that we follow, I think the biggest difference lies in, are we doing it to our horse?
Yes.
Or are we doing it for our
horse? For our horse. Yep. I completely agree.
And if we really want an authentic relationship with a horse, we have to do it for the horse.
Yeah, we've got to step back and not be in our predator mode.
We're balance the goals that are for us with what is important to the horse as well. What is for them and what is for us have to be mutually important.
Yes.
But as the higher intelligence, supposedly, or the ones with the bigger brains, we really have to give the horse what the horse needs in order to get back what we want.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
And I've been in that mindset of control and manipulation, and you get hurt in that area.
Yeah, that's where most of the accidents happen, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where things can go sideways in a hurry.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think watching things go sideways with psychological strategies, it was a bit of an epiphany for me where I was like, oh my God, what have we done?
Yeah.
What have we done? And the problem was we didn't change our intention. Exactly. All we did was change tools.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we'll wrap up natural horsemanship talk today with use the tools, use the techniques that are for the horse, for the benefit of the horse.
Yes.
And I think when you really take care of the horse in an authentic way, giving them what they need, that's when we get back all of the things we dreamed of having.
10 times more.
Yeah.
I agree.
Okay, so thank you everyone for joining us for another Horse Geeks podcast. Thank you to the new subscribers. More than welcome. Thanks for the great comments. Always warms our hearts when we get these comments. And so please like, share, subscribe, all of that. Help the Horse Geeks podcast get out there in the horse world if you like it. Okay, thanks everybody.
Thanks.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.